This is RV on Business.
Welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. It is 9 minutes past 11. Thank you so much for joining us. And for the next 15 minutes or so, we are going to be discussing investments. And more specifically, we're going to be discussing the funds that you choose to put into your investments. I've been getting a lot of questions about this, and I just saw from the questions that were coming through that there was a lot of confusion, really based on the fact that people don't understand the fundamentals. And often it is so important just to go back to basics, to investing 101, to understand how things work, how an investment is built, and also what people are looking for together at the same time, to use the terminology that is generally used in the marketplace so that you understand what it refers to and how it works. The two provisos I want to give upfront is that, number one, it's not complicated. It is a bit complex, but it's not complicated. If you sit through it and you take it step by step, it is really understandable. And you might need some guidance at certain places or guidance throughout the process. But at no time should you give up your hands, throw up your hands, and say, you don't understand, this is above you, because that's highly unlikely. The second thing is that this show is not a show where we give advice. We are not giving investment advice. We are not telling you where or how to put your money. We are simply giving you the building blocks as to how an investment portfolio is built, so that when you sit with your financial advisor, you have the tools to understand and to work through methodically the points and be able to understand them, so that when you walk out the meeting, you feel in control of what's going on, rather than feeling like you're a bat at night flying into walls and just hoping that things work out. Because ultimately what happens with that is that they don't work out. And the advisor will then turn around to you and say, I showed you everything. I explained everything to you. You said you understood. You signed that you understood. We then send you updates on a regular basis. You never commented. And when we asked you to please, meet to do this and that, you never came back to us. That's unfortunately how I've seen things over the years. But when you feel empowered and you don't feel embarrassed or belittled, you're able to say, look, I don't really understand this particular point. Please explain it again. That would really go a long way to making you more in control of your investments. The financial advisor is just a guide, just someone to give you direction. But like when you walk into a doctor's room, you can't just stand there and say, doctor, guess where I am ill? Unless you've got some, gaping hole and there's pus oozing out of it. You've got to go there and say, doc, I'm not feeling well in this area, or this is bothering me. And then the doctor will guide you based on his expertise or her expertise, what they feel the remedy would be. So the same thing with investing. What I want to do is to start off by saying, give an example that I give almost every single day to different investors. When you look at an investment, whether it's a flexible investment that we would call, trusts, or it's an endowment that has a certain time period that it needs to be invested and has its own peculiar tax laws, or it's a retirement product, be it a pension, a provident, or a retirement annuity, which also has its own tax laws about how premiums are deducted from a tax point of view and how they're not taxed. The growth of it is not taxed. They all have an engine in them that makes them grow. So if we, for example, spoke about a family car and we said we want to invest and the vehicle that we're using is a family car, let's call it a Toyota Corolla. You now have a choice between a 1.3 liter, a 1.6 liter, and let's say a two liter engine. Same car, different engines that you can put into it. The 1.3 is going to give you a very sluggish ride. It's going to be very predictable. You're not going to break any land speed records. But the chances of swerving off the road are slim because you're not going to accumulate that much speed. The 1.6, on the other hand, is a comfortable drive. It's got a bit of vroomer when you need it, a bit of energy. It's certainly not going to win any drag races from a stop street, but it'll give you a nice drive. But certain people might feel frustrated that on the uphills, they don't have that extra energy that they need when they want to overtake. The 2 liter is going to give you all the energy you need, all the power, all the torque, but you're also going to have a few bumper bashings. Might go a little bit too fast, might come off the road, might hit the dirt a bit, might not be able to brake in time. How does that relate to investing? It is exactly the same analogy. When a person says to me, "I want to invest, but I don't want to have any risk. I don't want to hear about what a politician said that affected my portfolio. I don't want to have to worry about what's happening in the Straits, in Iran, and all. I don't want to know. I just want to know that my money is growing." That is what we call a conservative investor. Now, that person is probably going to get frustrated when, in time, inflation is greater than the return that they're earning. In other words, the cost of holding that money is more than they're getting for that money. So inflation might be running at 6%, they might be only getting 5%. So in real terms, they're going backwards. Yes, the portfolio just got a straight line that goes up gradually. There's no bumps. You never go onto your portfolio, it's worth less than the day before, or very unlikely. But as an investment, it's really not a good idea because you're going backwards in real terms. And then you might have the investor on the other extreme who says, "I want to go as aggressive as possible, you know, because I was busy with other things until I turned 50. I now want to retire in 5 or 10 years' time. I don't want to hear about conservative investments. I just want to be as aggressive as possible." That's as dangerous as scenario A, because this person's going to be aggressive. It might be that for a while it really works to their advantage and they're doing really, really well. They might have started, for example, at the beginning of this year, plowing money into an investment, not seeing much of a return. All of a sudden, international markets stabilize and there's this tremendous growth that comes through, and he thinks or she thinks they are genii. But then life happens and there's a dip, and all of a sudden they can't tolerate it. They just can't handle the fact that they've lost money on paper. In real terms, they haven't lost because they haven't cashed out. But on paper, they've lost money. And they have sleepless nights. They don't get off the phone to their financial advisor. They swear, they shout, they threaten because they are insecure with the thought that they might have lost a little bit of money. And that's why upfront, it is so important to go through the motions. Often they're laborious, they're boring. You might just feel it's like piles and piles of compliance. But if your financial advisor is on the ball, they go through it quite efficiently. And that which is important, they highlight to you. I know personally that I enjoy doing what we call a risk profile. A risk profile is a set of almost random questions to the outsider that give you a score. And that score puts you into a conservative, a moderate, or aggressive section as to where we should choose funds. You could be on the board, you could be moderately aggressive, you could be moderately conservative, you could be aggressive right off the charts. But yet, when you speak to the person, you see that they've never done this before. They're very anxious. They're very nervous. And therefore, you qualify that outcome by saying, "I'm going to be a little bit more conservative in the initial outlook when we start to invest until the client gets used to how the markets are structured and how they work and how the returns come in, so that the investor gets time to settle into the situation." So we've got conservative, moderate, and aggressive. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll do a live read, and then I'll break those down for you a little bit more. Craig, it's all yours.
This is RV on Business.
So welcome back. We were looking at the three different broad categories of investors and the categories that they fit into. So we look at the conservative investor. The conservative investor will have things like cash, money market instruments, which is things like money market funds that you can get at the bank, bonds, and then certain other funds that are low risk in his portfolio. In other words, this is the type of guy who says, I don't want to lose money. I want a smooth ride, even if that means I get lower returns. Then that usually suits people who are either very careful with their money in the sense that this is all they've got and they can't gamble with it at all or take any risk. Or people on the other end of the spectrum, when they're very comfortable, they say, I just want this to grow at an expected rate so that I don't get any shocks along the way. Then you've got our moderate investor. You know, in the moderate, you're going to have less cash. So you'll have some cash, some bonds, some local shares, some offshore shares, and property or alternative investments like that that'll come into it. That'll give you a moderate portfolio. And that will usually have a maximum amount of shares that you can have. And that gives you a balance between being conservative and giving the aggressive growth. And here we look at an investor who says, I want my money to grow, but I don't want to take extreme risks. In other words, yes, if there's a corona outbreak or if there's a war, I appreciate that I'm going to have a bump in the road. But on the whole, I just want a growth that is consistent. I'm happy to forego the great amount of growth that I could get if I was more aggressive. Rather, I would have less panic in my portfolio, so to speak. And that's, again, for people with a longer-term view, often used in retirement planning. Then we've got our aggressive investors. Now, aggressive investors are local equities, offshore equities, property, some growth assets, and then sometimes we look at specialized sectors too, like offshore index trackers, local index trackers, funds like that can be brought into it. Sometimes we use funds that track crypto. Those can go into your aggressive portfolios. And what you need to hear from this investor, besides doing the risk analysis, you need to hear this investor say, I understand that markets move up and down. I'm investing for the long term and I want growth. And you know, I've seen that over the years where you go to an investor and you say, look, you've done pretty well over the last year. He says, yeah, but April and May were rough. And you say, okay, how do you know? He says, because I look at my app every week. Before I start my week, Monday morning, I sit down, I look at my app. Or the end of the week, I look and I see how my portfolio is doing. And that's really a sign of a mature investor. Doesn't look every day. Looks on the same time on a regular basis just to keep his or her proverbial feet in the water, understand how it's running. And that's just somebody that you can really start to work with on a more risky portfolio. But sometimes, as I said, we don't have straight conservative, moderate, or aggressive. So let's go through a little chart that I've designed that I use all the time, and it'll just give you an idea as to where certain people fit. So a very conservative investor is someone who's looking for capital protection. That is the most important thing. In other words, if they put in 100,000 Rand and they see that it's worth 98,500, there's a very good chance that their heart will stop. And they've made that clear to you. They don't want capital risk. They are prepared to forego growth for stability. Then you've got your conservative. That's low risk, some income, and also low volatility. Volatility is that up and down. Then you've got cautious moderate. Now we're starting to get out of the conservative and we're going into the moderate. Somebody who wants some growth, but still careful, and moderate is they want to balance risk and return. Now, there's balance, risk, and return, but what are we saying subconsciously there, subliminally? But we need to say it very clearly to an investor, you need time in the market. Then we go to your more moderate aggressive. So we're aggressive, but a little bit chilled. That's growth focused, but not fully aggressive, as the name indicates. Aggressive is someone who wants high growth and high volatility, not necessarily that they want high volatility, but they're prepared to accept it. Where they would be happy with high volatility is when they are feeling in money every single month, because they now have the ability to buy units when they are low as the market dips. And then you've got your very aggressive investor. That's maximum growth is their focus, and high risk is accepted. And you don't need to look at crazy stocks or crypto, for example, to be very aggressive. You could also look at things like gold, where it is a lot more predictable, a lot more trackable, and it is a safe haven. But on the other hand, people who buy it usually buy it for a long time. So a good way to put us all together is that investment risk is not a light switch that is either on or off. It's more like a volume button. You can turn it up or down depending on the person, the goal, and the time frame. And that is a really nice way to think about it. So if you start off in a portfolio as aggressive, you started off in your early 40s, you were aggressive. You've done very nicely in other areas of your life financially. And now you want to retire at 55. You're now 52. You can turn that dial down from aggressive to conservative. In other words, yes, I've made good money on this portfolio, but I don't want to put it at risk. I'm prepared to forego any potential further growth, future growth, in lieu of stability. I know what I've got. I just want it to keep above inflation. And I don't want to have to worry that at my retirement date, someone releases something from somewhere in the world, the whole world economy shuts down. And now I need to wait 3 or 4 years for my money to recover, which you only know in hindsight. But at the time, it's very, very scary. What I want to do is go back to something that I touched on really at the beginning of the show. And that's the difference between risk appetite and risk tolerance. I often use a very simple example of a child going into a pizza shop and saying, "I want a full-size pizza, please, with all the toppings." And the person behind the counter says, "Like, you're a little guy. Are you going to be able to handle this?" Says, "I can handle it." Sits down, halfway through his second slice. He's barfing all over the floor. And the guy comes out and says, "I told you, you can't handle it." And the answer is, "I had a risk appetite. I wanted to be aggressive, but I don't have the tolerance. In fact, I might even be lactose intolerant. I couldn't have even had the first slice." So let's break that down. When you're looking at tolerance, there's a certain amount of questions that you need to ask. And that is, how long are you going to invest the money for? Do you have emergency money in case you need money? Are you still earning an income? Do you have debt? What would be the acceptable drop in the market that you could stomach? Are you likely to withdraw at the wrong time? So, for example, something happens, you need to travel, you want to travel, you want to buy a new car. Are you going to touch this money just because it's there? And regardless of the fact that the timing is incorrect. And what is this money for? Is it retirement money? Is it education money? Or is it what we call funny money, surplus money that you can have an immediate view of that? Yes, if I take it at the wrong time, it's not a train smash, so long as I can buy the Porsche that I'm looking for. So let's give you a simple example. If a 30-year-old invests for retirement, they may have a high risk tolerance because the money is only needed in 25 to 30 years. So, in other words, after 10 years, if there's a big dip in the market and they look at it and say, "My money is worth exactly what I've put in, there's no growth." They aren't fazed by it because they understand why. Whereas a 70-year-old drawing money from his investment may have a lower risk tolerance because they need a stable and regular income. So that just puts it in perspective. So the key differences are key. The risk appetite is the risk you're willing to take, and the risk tolerance is what you are able to take. Game. Now, pizza example. I want the whole pizza. I can't stomach it. So, for example, somebody wants aggressive returns, but they need the money in 12 months. They cannot afford to have aggressive risks. And the opposite is also this, it comes into play. Someone may have financial stability to take the risks, but emotionally they can't cope with the losses. That also matters. And that's why it's so important to have a relationship. I said that earlier, that the risk profile might come out as super, what we call very aggressive, but speaking to this person, knowing where they live, where they educate their children, just talking about what they do for a holiday, you realize these are conservative people by nature. And if you had to have a scenario where they saw losses, they would be deeply, deeply upset. So that's why you need to take it into consideration. There is another angle of the whole scenario, and that's risk capacity. Risk capacity means the actual financial ability to take a risk, not your tolerance, your actual ability to take the risk. For example, a young man with a stable income and no immediate need for the money has a higher risk capacity. A retired person relying on the investment has a lower risk capacity. Someone with emergency savings can take more risk than someone with absolutely no backup. And money needed in 1 year should not be invested the same way that money, for the way that money is invested, if it's needed, in 20 years' time. So risk appetite is the heart. Tolerance is the stomach. And risk capacity is the wallet. Let's repeat that. Risk appetite is the heart. Risk tolerance is the stomach. Risk capacity is the wallet. What does that mean? The heart wants the return. The stomach must be able to handle the ups and downs, the lactose in the pizza. And the wallet must survive if things go wrong. When that child or that person walks out of the pizza shop, they must know that they have money in their wallet to go buy a box of Weet-Bix so that they don't starve. And that the fact that they made that investment that was incorrect is not a train smash. Let's look at something else. And now, to me, this is the most critical thing, and that's time horizon. And when you asked about how long do you want to put the money away for, when you get an answer where, the client shrugs his shoulders and says, "Well, I don't really know. Like, what do you think?" That's a time that you need to sit back, relax, and continue with the discussion because you need to understand what the time horizon is. Is this someone who's coming to you, as we read an example before, 25, single, doing really well, has got money to put away on a monthly basis? You know that there's family money to make a wedding. He's got a house that is basically paid off. Not very materialistic. And just saying to you, look, this money's sitting here, do something with it, and I don't know how long. By saying, I don't know how long, he's actually telling you that, 3 to 5 years sort of story, because he's got a tolerance to take it out if he needs it and a capacity. But a couple who's sitting in front of you, who's struggling to pay school fees and now wants to put money away for university. And in the back of your mind, you know that this investment is unlikely to see its maturity at university time. That's going to be dipped into before. Your time horizon is a lot shorter. And it can be so short that the best advice might not be an investment. The best advice for these people might be, please go to your bank on the app, open up a money market account. And the same 500 rand that you were going to put into an investment, put into your money market account. If by some chance you are able to accumulate 24 months worth of growth, and it was 24,000 rand, say 10,000 rand of investments there, that's great. Then we can take that lump sum invest it and add a recurring onto it. But if the money stops, keeps getting dipped into, then yes, a money market account is the right place because the costs of an investment are only justified when the investment makes a return. And if you don't leave it there a longer time, you're not going to make a return. This takes us to our next point. And our next point is what I call braaflace investing. The braaflace on a Sunday mid-morning to early afternoon can be a very intimidating place for some people. It can be a place for other people to talk the biggest a load of codswallop. And it can be a place for other people just to keep quiet, click their tongs, and turn the meat. What am I referring to? You never really know who you're talking to. Yes, sometimes we know that this person has done incredibly well, they're great in investing, etc., etc. Their best friend, their closest friend, their lifelong schoolmate might be somebody who's just really fallen on hard times and is having a really, really difficult time. And the third chap might just be your average Joe, sort of cliched character who has a little bit of leftover every month on the salary and lives a comfortable life. The way they talk about investing is totally different. And then you've got the fourth character. And this is a guy where, as I said, codswallop is his language. Absolute BS. Stands there, talks, makes a big noise, knows everything. But when you really strip it away, has done absolutely nothing. Knows which properties to invest in, knows which unit trusts are brilliant, which company is terrible, which company is brilliant. But when you start listening and understanding what they're saying, they're just talking a lot of hot air. So before you get intimidated, depressed, or excited, take that information, call your financial advisor and say, I need to debrief. I've just heard a lot of information and I need to put it down and discuss it. So the first thing that we can do to break down those type of discussions is that when you hear someone say, I had an invested fund X, Y, or Z, or a 91 fund, which is now the invested fund, or a Momentum, or a Stanlib, or a some of the Fairtree, Fairburn, one of the boutique funds, absolutely brilliant. The first thing you need to do is ask your financial advisor, please can I see this fund? You can do it yourself. Go on to chat, ask it to bring it up for you, and compare it to its peers. How's it done compared to other funds? You might find that it's been absolutely sterling. It's been brilliant. Or it might be the dog, might be the runt of the litter. In other words, everything else in that risk profile section has done far better than it. And just that this guy was caught in it and is trying to tell you a story and hasn't bothered to compare it to its peers. So that's the point that I want to get across is that when you look at particular funds, understand where they fit in, conservative, moderate, or aggressive. And when you look at specific funds within those categories, compare them to their peers. And I want to end off by saying that yesterday's winner is not automatically tomorrow's winner. I'm sure a lot of you are rolling your eyes and saying, oh, I've heard that, that past performance is no guarantee for future performance. Yes, remember that. You're choosing the company, the fund manager. You're looking at past performances, but you need to understand that funds behave differently. And when we get on to, we'll get on to that now just after the break. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. It is 19 minutes to 12. And just to let you know that if you're looking to reach a loyal, engaged audience, there's no better place than advertise right here on Chai FM. Our listeners tune in every day for your music, conversation, and news that they can trust. When you advertise on Chai FM, you're not just buying airtime, you're buying part of a community that genuinely listens. Whether you're a small business or an established brand, we'd love to have a conversation about how we can work together. You can WhatsApp us on 061 895 1019. Again, 061-895-1019. Or you can email us on info@chaifm.com and we'll reach out to you. Chai FM, part of your day, every day. And if you are thinking of advertising, I can tell you that I've been part of this radio station for many, many years. And it was so exciting to be part of it when it started. And now it is having its second revolution. It's new management, new CEO, new energy. And now is the time to get in at the grassroots time. Advertise, speak to the team, and let's see how we can help you. Right. So we ended up saying that past performance is not a guarantee for the future, but it's definitely interesting information. The next thing I want to get on to is blending an investment and also a blended portfolio. So when you look at funds, they're going to sit in these different categories: conservative, moderate, aggressive, and subcategories. But when you look at the particular fund, you will find that Allan Gray Equity doesn't hold one fund, doesn't hold Bidvest, for example, which I doubt it does, but it doesn't hold, holding a Northam Platinum. It'll hold different sections in different areas at different holdings. And they will use terms like overweight equity, overweight offshore. In other words, they are above their mandate or at their maximum mandate for that. So every fund that you're investing in is actually blended within itself. The fund manager is not buying one stock. The fund manager and the fund manager's team are buying multiple stocks in multiple sections, sectors, sorry, across the board, in order to fulfill the mandate they've been given by the mandate of the fund. So if there are a fund manager that deals in what we call income or income type of funds, that'll be cash. And there they're looking for stability and liquidity. They could also have a bit of bonds and income. There they're looking for steady returns with lower volatility. When we look at local shares, we're looking for long-term growth. Offshore shares, we're looking for global diversification and long-term growth. Property, income, and growth potential and alternatives is an ability to, for you to invest in alternative investments that are not standard in the usual way that we understand them. When it comes to offshore, South Africa has been through a long, long journey over the last 20 years. I remember when the first offshore fund arrived, and there was this rush to get as much money as you could out of the country. Until investors realized that 3-4% was a great return offshore, that a high interest rate cycle in South Africa, you could get 10% without too much sweat. And all of a sudden, they invested, they brought their money back. They lost money on the actual growth, but because the rand dollar worked against them, they brought more back than they sent out, and now they had to pay capital gains on their investment. It was insult to injury. And a lot of investors have realized that South African investments are absolutely rock solid. Great companies, great pedigree, huge amount of experience. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't invest offshore in the leading companies in the world. Companies like Coca-Cola, Nvidia, Disney, and Netflix. Those are some of the companies. And again, that's not advice. I'm just mentioning some of those that I hear all the time that people want to invest in. So by being able to go offshore, it just gives you that edge. When we look at a blended portfolio, what happens when someone says to you, okay, I'm going to give you 100,000 rand, but I might need 30,000 of it when my son leaves school in 3 years' time. But the rest I want to go absolutely aggressive with. Then one has the ability to blend a portfolio. You can put 70 aggressive as per the client's instruction. And what funds and what companies, that's a discussion. and 30 can be conservative. But even within the conservative, you can say to the client, look, instead of putting it in money market, why don't we use income funds? There's a possibility you might have one or two negative months a year, but over a year cycle, especially over a 3 year cycle, you should beat money market funds, and it'll give you a better growth. But you just need to have a little bit of an understanding that we might say, wait a month or two because we've just had a bad one. Whereas in money market, that won't happen. The repo rate either goes up or it goes down. And that's the way it works. So you do have this ability, but what frustrates me when I look at people's portfolios? Well, let's put it, what incenses me when I look at people's portfolios is when they use some of these very old portfolios, and it's called a smooth bonus type of portfolio. In other words, it's a portfolio that's meant to hold back some of the tremendous growth you make in the good years in order to add it on as a bit of a bonus in the years that you make bad returns. You pay management fees for that. On average, they don't give the returns you're looking for. And it's just a portfolio that almost excuses the financial advisor from giving advice, because it's like a cover-all scenario. It's like going to a physio with a sore ankle, and the physio says, well, I don't really know the muscles, ligaments, and tissues in the ankle. So I tell you what, I'll just treat everything with heat and then we'll wrap it up. It's not going to work. You've got to be more specific. And if not your field of expertise, ask someone to come in and help you, or ask the client to go elsewhere. The thing that frustrates me is when I see what I would say is a racehorse and a donkey in the same portfolio. In other words, instead of giving the client a blended portfolio that is going to achieve what they're looking to achieve, you cover all your bases by putting equity and cash in the same portfolio. I understand in the previous example where we need to have one investment, a portion for 3 years, and a portion for longer. But if it's just a general portfolio, it doesn't make sense to be ultra aggressive and ultra conservative in the same investment. Rather break them down and have different silos, different investment silos for different investment horizons. Because what will happen is that the investor will get frustrated by cash holding back the equities, and equally frustrated when equities crash and they bring down the solid and dependable return that you could have got on cash. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with you in a moment.
This is RV on Business.
Well, welcome back to 101.9 High FM. It is 9 minutes to 12. And just to let you know that if that High FM wants to hear from you, High FM is updating our voices of High, and we need your voice to do it. Send us a voice note, 30 seconds or less, and tell us why you want to be part of the High FM community. What keeps you listening? What does the station mean for you? Send us your voice notes on 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. We cannot wait to hear from you. Right, we are going to wrap up because, as usual, we are running out of time. I just want to discuss one last topic. I have a few to discuss, but I think we'll run them over for next week. And that is the term correlation. It is a term that's used, and I'm just going to explain it in very simple terminology because it's very, very important to understand. If you look at an investment portfolio and a person has balance funds, so they have fund manager A balanced, fund manager B balanced, and fund manager C balanced. You might think they have a diversified portfolio. In other words, they've got three different fund managers with three different outlooks as to where they should buy their underlying equities, the underlying assets. And therefore, when the one is slightly lagging, the other one will be pulling ahead. That's only if the correlation works. But if they're not correlated, you could get yourself into a whole lot of trouble that is just silly. What it means, if you get three fund managers who are holding the same funds, the same equity shares. What are you doing? You're running around in circles. You want to make sure that you've got one fund manager, for example, and just an example, who won't touch property shares, and another fund manager who has got a sterling track record of including property shares into their portfolio. Why? Because that will give you a correlation. The one fund is going to perform when the other one doesn't have the ability to. And that's what it's all about. It's almost like having a four-wheel drive car that's not permanently on four-wheel drive, but can kick into when you want to. So that's why it is so important that you understand what these are all about. And your financial advisor can help you with that. They can help you with the correlation. It's really, really important to have a look at. We still got questions that we haven't answered. We still haven't discussed diversification and matching the purpose for the investment and behavior. So let's pick those up next week. I know we have shows booked out for the next couple of weeks, but I would really like to get to this. So we'll do our best to touch on it next week. Just to wish you all a great rest of the week. Craig, thanks so much for pushing the buttons. Everybody, thank you for listening. We'll chat to you shortly.